The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, I'm Alex Krotowski, and welcome to this week's special edition of Tech Weekly from The Guardian. The ability to be anonymous on the web is becoming increasingly rare. Rather than be a place where you can be anyone from anywhere, like the early internet pioneers celebrated, the gnomic, or the named web, is rapidly becoming the norm. Online services from Facebook to Google to the Guardian news site and e-commerce portals take tiny bits of information about you, what you do, who you say you are, who your friends say you are, and use that to build a uniquely identifiable profile that tells them exactly who you are when you're on the web. But this goes beyond connecting your online activity with an IP address or even a pseudonym that you've created. Increasingly, these little pieces of who you are online are tied into who you are offline, your real name, your real networks, your real location. What do we lose when our online activities are tied to our offline selves? And how anonymous can we really be online? Over the next two episodes of Tech Weekly, I speak with two people fighting the corner for the anonymous web.
I'm Andrew Lumen, and I'm the executive director of Tor, meaning I'm responsible for everything Tor.
Andrew Lumen is the executive director of the Tor Project, a not-for-profit organization that produces software called Tor to anonymize internet traffic. When you log into Tor, web services have no idea who you are or where you come from. Initially funded by the U.S. Navy, Tor is now available free for all and is used by both good guys and bad guys alike. Tell me a little bit about Tor. What is it?
So Tor is a couple of things. We're a nonprofit charity that does research and development into online privacy and anonymity. We produce some software, typically the Tor browser, which is a bundle of software that lets you be anonymous by default, and it gives you the user control over what you do and who you reveal your information to. The core of that is software called Tor to further confuse everybody with multiple things called Tor. The Tor software bounces your communications all around the world, and at a minimum, you go through at least three different places so that someone watching your internet traffic cannot figure out who you are nor where you're going on the internet.
And why do this?
We originally did it because we were increasingly concerned about all these websites and, you know, the 2000-2001.com bubble. Everyone was offering free services, and by free they meant we take all your information and sell it as many times as possible. And we wanted a way to, one, put some of our research into practice and see how it would work, and two, because we wanted to give the control over your information to you, the user, not have all these companies take it by default and let you make decisions as to, do you trust Google? Do you trust Amazon? Do you trust the BBC? Whatever. And since then, around 2007 or so, we've had an increasing amount of people using Tor to circumvent, you know, national censorship or corporate censorship and things like that, where, you know, they actually like their government. They don't want to take down their government. They just want to get out and see, you know, what the latest sports news is or the latest entertainment news or something like that.
Now, see, this is different, isn't it, from seeking services that have, you know, different opinions from your own or being not buying into a particular ideology of, say, of relevance, for example, that Google chooses to serve up, to deliver to us. It's more about actually being invisible from Google and still taking the service. Is that right?
It's about selective invisibility, I guess, where there are a lot of people who use Tor to get to Gmail. and to get to Google and to do the searches, and they log into their accounts and they do all their stuff because they trust Google, but they may not trust everything else they do in a browsing session, where you could go from news websites, entertainment websites, to sports websites, to Google to go buy something on Amazon, and then all those ads are tracked all the way through. But if you've only logged into Google, only Google knows who you are, and everyone else has you an anonymous person. And then maybe you do shopping on Amazon, and then eventually you log in, and then Amazon knows who you are. But maybe you want to look for, maybe you want to log out of Google and do some sensitive searches because, your spouse or your kid get diagnosed with a medical condition that you want to look up, but don't necessarily want all those searches tied to you forever.
How aware do you think people are of the degree to which they are non-anonymous online?
I think they're becoming aware, and there's a difference between what you put out there in sort of your social networking, your Facebook, your Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever. There's a difference between what they know they put out there and then the amount of information collected about, every story you read, every link you click on, wherever there's ads or Google Analytics or tracking, all that's recording what you do down to intimate details of how many seconds you spent reading different parts of a page, which content you highlighted, all that. Things like the Facebook timeline, Apple has an iPhoto cloud, iCloud thing that by default all the pictures you take go online. And the Google privacy change, when they made the announcement of their consolidating privacy policies, a lot of people wondered, why would they do that? And then they read it, and while they still don't understand it, they now know that, Google owns like 50 companies, and all these companies are now collating all their information to one place to build one profile.
Say I'm an individual blogger, and actually it's quite useful, this information, to know who comes to my site and how long they stay and which posts they look at. And I wouldn't be able to access that information or to identify which are the most useful, the most interesting, the most unique contributions to dialogues if I don't have this kind of information. So what do you lose, both as a content creator and also as a content consumer, by using Tor and being anonymous?
I don't know. Well, you lose, as a content creator, you would lose uniquely identified information. You would see in general, Tor still loads all the scripts, it still does everything. It just doesn't tie it back to, you as a person individually, unless you log into your account. And that's a choice, your readers or subscribers or users would have to make as to, I trust Guardian or I trust BBC or I trust, CNN or whatever. I log into their sites, now they know exactly who I am, but at the same time, they don't know where I am, because if I'm using Tor, we hide your physical location unless you tell them. And classic example is, people will log in to comment on something, but they won't necessarily want to give up where they physically are in the world, but they'll give up who they are. And so they log into these accounts, they do their comments. For the most part, most comments are sane and logical. There's always people out there, jerks. It doesn't matter if you're anonymous or not. A jerk in a real name environment is still a jerk. While Facebook and Google Plus don't like to advertise it, they have tons of abuse problems for people who are fully identified and know their names. And when you ask them, it's because they're a jerk in real life too. It just translates to online. But it also, in aggregate, in some theory where everyone uses Tor to get your website, you would still see what the popular articles are. You would still see, what people are reading and how long they're reading it. You just wouldn't have the individuals of, this is John, this is Jane, this is Steve.
Is it truly anonymous? So it actually cannot get back to anybody? There's no way to decrypt or to walk back through the system?
So as academic researchers, we're slightly more honest than everybody else.
Hooray.
And we'll say that nothing is truly anonymous. We work to anonymize the internet traffic between you and wherever you're going, and it's up to you what you do with it. A lot of people have told me that they use Tor, they log into Facebook, and they think they're anonymous. And I'll step back and say, okay, but you log Facebook, so Facebook knows who you are. And they never thought about that. And the flip side of that is Facebook used to not like Tor, because they were concerned about, you know, hiding information and how can they sell this to advertisers, until foreign governments started blocking access to Facebook and they started getting all these Tor users coming to their site, logging in. So they knew exactly who these people were and what networks they were part of and all this, but they didn't know where they were in the world. And the fact that they could access it at all was a good thing for them.
It's interesting that the software does allow for that to have almost a split personality, as it were. Especially with systems like Facebook and with Google. You mentioned specifically Facebook and Google Plus, and you know, having as many real name jerks as in anonymous environments, say on YouTube, for example. But it seems to me that the web is moving into an identifiability mode, particularly in the West, where you do have a consolidated identity on Google now, and you do have a lot of information about yourself and your friends and your network and your graph on Facebook. So as we move into identifiability, de-anonymization of the web, how has the ability to be anonymous become more important?
You are more than your data. And, you know, I'll do the stereotypical thing and say that a lot of the younger people are far more aware of this than their parents and grandparents. Having talked to many high school and university age students, they self-censor a lot. They have a very good idea of what's online and what they put online and what they don't put online, because they've been trained over the years where data has been lost or Facebook has changed their privacy settings or whatever, that things they thought were private become not private, become horribly embarrassing to them. And, you know, OMG, it's the end of my life. So-and-so knows I like so-and-so, when I meant to tell my inner circle of friends, not the world. The ability to be anonymous is increasingly important, in that it gives people control, it lets them be creative, it lets them figure out what, you know, explore their identity and find out what they want to do. Or just research topics that isn't typically them. And they may not necessarily want tied to their real name for perpetuity.
Well, that's an interesting, I think that's an interesting dimension, actually, because an anonymity is more than privacy, isn't it? Can you talk a little bit about the distinction between the two?
Privacy is very contextual. You know, there's the old adage is, if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. Well, I've asked law enforcement, why don't you have cameras in your bathroom? Why do you close your shades at night? And they're like, well, because that's just creepy. Like, why is it creepy? You have nothing to hide, right? and it's become, so that's a false dichotomy, but there are times you want a lot of privacy. You know, if you are in the hospital, you probably don't want cameras there recording and sharing your medical records with everybody to see. But if you're out with your friends or whatever, you're taking pictures, you know, you want to be a teenager, you'd be a teenager. You want to go to spring break, go to spring break. Privacy is defined by you as to what you define private. Some people are intensely private and very worried about anything they share. Others are far more extroverts and willing to share everything. The privacy is really defined by you, the person. Anonymity is that you're not uniquely identifiable in a set of people. If you go to your typical shopping plaza or mall, everyone will, for the most part, will blend in with each other, and that becomes sort of an average. If you happen to be the person in an orange jumpsuit because you like orange jumpsuits, then you stand out and you're not anonymous. Even though we don't know who you are as an individual with a real name, we know you're the person in the orange jumpsuit, as opposed to nobody else in an orange jumpsuit. So that's sort of the difference between anonymity and privacy.
So why is that important? Why is this notion of blending in with the crowd, with the de-individuation, as it were, of anonymity important versus, you know, the focus on privacy, which so many people do when they're talking about this topic?
It's important because it lets you get to start from a clean slate. You get to start off with the ability to not be prejudged and not have anyone looking at your data to say, well, in the past, you've always done X, Y, and Z, and so obviously you're going to do, you know, Z1, Z2, as opposed to, you know, maybe you want to start at A and say, let's start over. You know, maybe my new life, maybe I just got divorced, maybe I just came out of alcohol or drug treatment, and I want to start over. My old life is completely separate. It's gone.
Now, that's a really interesting element, isn't it? Because, for example, Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg both believe that tying your online and your offline identity together equals authenticity. And therefore, Facebook identity is your authentic identity. Is that not the case? Are we not the sum of our parts? Are we not the sum of our experiences? And we should simply embrace that and say, hey, man, this is who I am. I have a past. I have a background. I'm okay with that. Take me warts and all. This is where I'm at.
I think for a lot of cultures, that's a scary proposition. I understand, Facebook wants the world to move that way. I think most of the world will resist that. I mean, everyone signs on Facebook because your friends did it and peer pressure. Very few do it because they want to tie their entire life together. With Facebook and the online in general, it's very hard to show different facets of who you are. You can't have your, silly party Andrew on Facebook and then log in the next day and say, no, I'm serious business executive Andrew. And then, the third day is, here's my hobby. It happens to be, whatever. And I only want you to look at the one facet I want you to see, not across the board for everything.
I want to take a slightly different tack to wind up here. The Tor project started out as a U.S. naval project. What is the role of the U.S. government in the Tor project now?
So actually, Tor is based on a protocol called Onion Routing that was started by the U.S. Navy. Tor was started by two graduate students at MIT here in Boston, and they happened to run into the researcher at the Navy and said, have you ever thought of putting this on the Internet? And Paul Syverson is the researcher, and Paul said, well, we don't really need it so much. We have ships with guns to protect our packets. And their thought was just, it'd be the Navy Anonymity Network, which doesn't work so well. And they were realizing this around the time they met Roger and Nick from MIT. And we have, so we're a nonprofit. Our 990 is our tax filing we do every year, and it's a fully public document. We have been funded by the U.S. government, majority for the past 7 or 8 years, where most of them work on internet freedom or anonymous communications. How do we actually be anonymous in a world where the internet can record everything you do? How do we help get around censorship and circumvention? And, from the State Department, the Department of Defense, to Electronic Frontier Foundation, to, other journalist type organizations that have funded us. Our funding is varied.
And how do you make money?
So we give our software away for free. It's also free software, as in freely licensed, so you can take it and do what you want with it. All of, just about everything we're paid to do is turn our research into practical applications, or to do more research into, think of a situation where everything you do is fully identified and recorded. How do you be anonymous without standing out? How do you send traffic through firewalls? How do you protect user information when they want to divulge everything to Facebook or Twitter or Google Plus or whatever? And do you even, is that, some of the questions we get asked are, is this even something we should worry about? In a world where the internet's disconnected, then what do you do? And situations like that, where we get paid to do the research, we write papers, we present at conferences, and that's how we make our money. We also accept donations, but donations are maybe 5% of our total budget.
Though I imagine that anonymization services like the Tor project are part of a growth industry. As you say, people are starting to become a bit more aware of the relationship between their offline and their online identities, and they're starting to consider things like privacy as well as whether or not they want to stand out in a crowd. Are anonymization services like the Tor project becoming a bigger part of, say, the commercial enterprise because of intellectual property, because of, knockoffs in foreign countries for IP stuff?
I think it's starting to. People are becoming aware of what's being recorded. There was recently, last week, a story where some New York City hotels were offering, not only are you paying for the Wi-Fi, they're injecting ads. They're watching your traffic and injecting ads based on what you're browsing and what you're doing. And that sort of freaks people out. And there was a similar test run software called Form, I think, with British Telecom and TalkTalk in the UK. And, you know, they ran, quote, testing scenarios where they would watch everyone's traffic and inject ads into it. And someone sent us screenshots from TalkTalk, I believe, where you go to Apple.com and there's banner ads all over it. And I'll guarantee you Apple does not want banner ads on their website. And that sort of information is sort of in your face. And what is happening? Why is this happening? And people are becoming aware that, you know, you used to be able to trust your internet service provider to not mess with your traffic because you pay them for a connection, not to do all sorts of other things. And increasingly, companies are trying to figure out ways to basically monetize you multiple times over, where they sell your traffic data. Almost every ISP in the world, you go through one of their proxy servers. They do this for two reasons. One, because they can cache a lot of content, and people, you know, the top 1,000 sites will be cached, so they'll actually be faster. So it makes it's less network engineering they have to do. But at the same time, they get to collate a whole lot of data about what their users are doing, and they can sell that, as well as, you know, you're paying for internet connection. And they can add on value-add services and all this other stuff. And some people are increasingly getting tired of it. And they just want, you know, I pay you for an internet connection, do nothing else with it. So they start using VPNs, they start using proxies, they start using Tor. And, you know, it's moved on from there. And with laws like Hadopi in France, and the U.S. has its own six strikes plan coming, where people are like, look, you know, personally, I had a printer online because I used it so I could print wherever I was in the world. It got takedown notices for intellectual property violations. I'm like, it's a printer. It can't share data. But it doesn't matter, because if I got three or six of those, you know, my internet connection would be disconnected. And even though it's an accusation of, we think you did X, ISPs take it as, you did X, and therefore you're bad. We should disconnect you.
One of the massive fears, though, about anonymity is not just the bad behavior, but is you know, what we'll colloquially refer to as the bad guys. How does Tor respond to the fact that bad guys are probably using the service?
They are. We work with law enforcement a lot, and they are fully aware of bad guys on Tor. However, the criminals already have all the privacy they could ever need because they're willing to break the laws. They're willing to steal identities. They're willing to hack into machines. They're willing to run botnets. Things like that normal people can't do. So the normal person is left out of any privacy whatsoever on the internet, and only criminals have privacy. So our approach has generally been to work with law enforcement to explain to them what Tor is and is not. People sort of hear Tor, and then they think, you know, forget it, I'll never solve this case. But really, there's a human at the other end, and that's what law enforcement targets most of the time, is humans make mistakes, they do silly things, they trust the wrong things, and that's how they've caught nearly everyone who uses Tor as part of their illegal schemes. At the same time, we've heard a lot of law enforcement who say, yeah, I know Tor because I use it every day. And we don't ask for demographics, we don't ask for registration, but it's, you know, law enforcement's also using it. And
that's interesting. So how much human behavior comes through, even in sort of browsing patterns and activity?
Yep.
Enough to profile and capture and identify despite the use of an anonymization system.
Yeah. There's a new breed of companies out there who are trying to beat Google Analytics and the other like web tracking services to give you stats about your sites and usage and all that. They actually say they don't record IP addresses because they don't need it anymore. They fingerprint your browser profile, your cookie profile, your language profile, and, you know, they also set temporary cookies where they can track you across the web as to what you're looking at, what ads you load, how long you read a page, and all of that sort of stuff collated together, we'll start building big pictures about you.
So in fact, when it comes to some of the problems that people have with notions of privacy, you know, like the privacy policy at Google or even Facebook, in many ways those are irrelevant in the future. In a future system in which Tor is the default, people are still going to be targeted because because their behavior is going to give them away, not their identity or their IP address.
Right, and plus people will still log into sites. I mean, there are lots of sites where people use Tor. Just because they don't want either you go to a coffee shop, go to wherever, and you log on the internet, you don't want to broadcast. You know, people are well aware now that everything you do on the Wi-Fi is out there and recorded, and, you know, I don't want to do that. I don't want to let the creep in the corner know what I'm doing or even who I am, so I'll use Tor, I'll use a VPN to protect my traffic. So all they see is, you know, encrypted data going back and forth. They don't know who I am or what I'm doing. But there's still plenty of people who will be in the coffee shop, will use Tor, will log into Foursquare and check in. Now I am here.
That's genius.
which is fine. I mean, it's your decision. It's your decision to say, you know, I want to let the world know where I am, but I don't know want people to know which person I am, or I don't want to share all my login credentials and all my other browsing with everybody at the same coffee shop.
Unless I specifically choose to to check in on Foursquare. That's excellent.
I mean, even then, you can check in on Foursquare and say, I was here, but that's just one part of your personality. They have no idea that they're going, you know, they're doing work, they're doing something else. They just happen to know where they are in the world. And the point is to give the power to the users. Let them decide what they want to share or not.
You've been listening to a special episode of Tech Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alex Kratosky, and based on the pieces of data that I've been able to accumulate, I've come to the opinion that the person producing this program is Jason Phipps. Find out more at guardian.co.uk/techweekly.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.